This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Unreported and uncontrolled fires in Canada's boreal forest burn vast areas every year. As the North heats faster than the rest of the world due to climate change, these fires are hotter and wilder, even creating their own weather systems. In a possible sign of the future, on May 15, 2011, with only minutes warning, really, the 7,000 residents of Slave Lake, Alberta, were forced to flee a wall of oncoming flames. One-third of the town, including the municipal building and library, burned to the ground. A week later, residents were still living in evacuation centers. Wildfires are back in the news. The recognized expert is Dr. Mike Flanagan, a senior researcher with Natural Resources Canada, an expert for the Canadian Forest Service, and professor of wildland fire at the University of Alberta. Dr. Flanagan, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Mike, I thought summer was fire season. These big fires in Canada's north so early in the spring, is that unusual?
Not for Alberta. We do get spring fires in Alberta. After the snow melts, there's about a four-week window where things are dry on the ground and the vegetation hasn't turned green. It hasn't greened up yet. And during this period, fires are fairly common in Alberta.
And could you tell us, why was the town of Slave Lake surprised by such a monster fire?
Well, I don't want to dwell on specifics like Slave Lake because I don't have all the information on Slave Lake. But what I can tell you is that fires can move rapidly when there's strong winds and dry weather like we've had in Alberta the last few weeks. So fires can move quickly, and if communities are in the path, they are at risk.
And I was surprised, you don't need to have a long-term drought to have a fire risk. These forests can dry out fairly quickly, is that right?
Well, much of the boreal, especially the boreal shield, has very shallow soils, such that there's a memory of only a few days to a week in those forest fuels. Regardless of how much rain you've had before that, if you have a week of warm, dry, windy weather, you can have a raging inferno. It's the forest fuels that really drives the fire situation. If the fuels get dry, fires can start and fires can spread.
And what part does the Rocky Mountain pine bark beetle play in this?
Well, I'm a fire person and not a bug person, but I have done a bit of reading on this, and vast areas of BC interior, mountain pine beetle has killed lodgepole pine. Now, these pine trees die, and they're standing there. Eventually, the wind will blow them over. But while they're standing, their needles go from an orange to a red to a gray. And during these periods, we are concerned about fire behavior, and this is a course of active investigation. And particularly the gray stage, which is 3 to 5 years after the death of the tree, the needles that are still left can spread quite quickly and cause spot fires. In advance of the fire, so make it kind of accelerating the fire front. So it's a very dangerous situation if a fire gets up and running in these mountain pine beetle killed stands.
And I've read that climate scientists have predicted greater warming in the north, of course, in Canada and Russia and Alaska. Does that therefore lead to more fires or more intense fires, and is that actually happening yet?
Yes, and I'll just, if I can back up just a little bit, I'll answer that question. There's kind of three or four factors that influence fires. The first is, we kind of touched on, is the fuels and what type of fuel. Conifers burn easily, deciduous less so. How dry the fuels are important. Ignition, people, and lightning are the main agents of fire starts. And the third factor is weather, which I consider to be the most important. Hot, dry, windy weather are very important to fires. Now, in the future, the climate models, general circulation models, suggest that we're going to be a much warmer world, especially in northern latitudes, Russia, Siberia, Alaska, Canada. And with warmer temperatures come longer fire seasons, as fires will start earlier in the spring and go later in the fall. With warmer temperatures, there'll be more lightning activity. More lightning activity, the more fire starts you have. And the last reason is, the warmer it gets, the more evapotranspiration we have, and which means the fuels will be drier unless there's significant changes in precipitation, significant increases in precipitation. And for every degree Celsius warming, you need about a 10% increase in precipitation during summer. So much of northern Canada is looking at 4 to 6 degrees Celsius warming, you need an increase of 46% in precipitation, which the models don't suggest, though our confidence in precipitation is less than temperature. The end result is that fuels are drier, which means it's easier for fires to start and spread.
Yes, this is something I've had trouble understanding because I've seen predictions that the northern limits will be actually growing wetter and wetter, and in past ages they were even tropical, almost humid forests. So how do we then get more forest fire activity out of that wet situation?
With the Arctic Ocean, the ice pack becoming seasonal, there will be more precipitation, especially in the autumn when the water is still open. You get kind of a lake effect or sea effect snowfall or rain event. But during the fire season, the warm season, as long as you have periods of drought, you can have forest fires. And with climate change, we expect more extreme weather, more extreme droughts, more extreme flooding. And when those droughts occur, fires can happen. And fires are not just restricted to the forest. We have a new study with NASA looking at tundra fires. And there's been some very large tundra fires in the last few years. And these appear to be becoming more common.
And for those who don't know what tundra is, what does that mean for us?
Well, tundra, it's so cold that trees cannot grow, generally because there's no summer warmth for the seed to be viable and for seedlings to be established. There's permafrost, that is underneath the organic material. There's ice all year long. And there's grasses, forbs, herbs, and occasionally shrubs. And this is tundra. And there's also, interesting, a lot of hydrates that are stored in the permafrost. And if the warming continues and permafrost melts, these hydrates, methane, will be released, which are very effective greenhouse gases.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Canadian fire expert Dr. Mike Flanagan. Mike, how do we know that climate change is involved in wildfires? Who is doing research on this?
Well, there's a number of people around the world looking at this. In Canada, we've been working on it since the mid-1980s, if you can believe it, which is 25 years now plus. And, you know, we've published work that suggests that the increases we've seen in fire activity in Canada is already the result of human-caused climate change. For example, in Canada, our average area burned in the 60s and 70s was about 1 million hectares a year. Currently, we burn about 2 million hectares a year, which is a doubling. 2 million hectares is about half the size of Nova Scotia, approximately the size of Massachusetts, to give it some context. And we've done a number of studies that suggest by the end of this century, we expect another doubling of area burned. In some papers for Western North America, Alaska, BC, Yukon, increases could be as high as fivefold, so five times more fire than we currently see.
That's a whole new landscape for living you're describing. You know, back in November 2007, I interviewed Dr. Tom Gower. He said Canada's boreal forests are no longer a carbon sink. They are a net source of global warming gases. I know that's a huge question, but I want to ask if you would agree with that, and do wildfires add to the carbon burden, or are they kind of carbon neutral?
It's actually disturbances like insects and fire that make our boreal forest a carbon source rather than a sink. And the larger aspect is that about 20% of our boreal forest is wetlands or peatlands. And with more drought, these will become vulnerable to burning. And they store vast amounts of carbon, and it's kind of a legacy carbon. It's been building up over thousands and thousands of years. And greenhouse gas releases from these peat fires can be significant on the global scale. Previous studies done in Indonesia suggest that peat fires in Indonesia released 20 to 40% of global fossil fuel emissions in 1 year. And the peat reserves, the peat and carbon reserves in Canada and Siberia completely dwarf anything in Indonesia. So if these peatlands begin to burn, they burn already, and they go into the ground, they smolder, and they can burn right through winter and then start up again in the spring. With more extreme droughts, more and more of these peatlands could burn and release significant amounts of greenhouse gases, which would feed the warming, a positive feedback. smokestack, if you like.
Well, what about wildfires further south? In B.C., the city of Kelowna, with almost 250,000 people, has been threatened by fire twice. And if the planet heats up as predicted, well, we had the Russian capital was threatened in 2010. Do you think major cities will be at more risk from uncontrollable fires?
Anywhere where there's communities or people in the forest or near the bush, they are at risk. And with global warming, climate warming, we expect this risk to increase. And we only have to look around the globe. It's not just a Canadian situation. In recent years, there's been fires in Russia, as you mentioned. The year before, February 2009, there were catastrophic fires in Australia. There's been catastrophic fires in Greece, in California. This is a global phenomenon, and it's only going to get worse.
Well, how do we need to rethink fires and fire planning in response to that?
There's already a few strategies at hand to help communities as well as homeowners. It's, in Canada, it's called FireSmart. In the United States, it's called FireWise. And these are guidelines to help homeowners protect their homes. And a lot of it's just common sense. Don't have cedar shakes on your roofs. Most homes build down because of embers falling on the rooftop and the roof catching fire. Also, do not stack firewood against your home. Don't have burnable shrubs near your right adjacent to your house, things like that. But also for communities, building fire guards around the community. And by that, we mean reducing the fuels close to town or the community. And this can be done mechanically by chainsaws and just removing the forest fuels, putting pavement in if you like, or grass and sprinklers. And you can also use prescribed burning to burn the regions adjacent to communities to protect them from fire in the future. So I often say you can have a little smoke now in a managed way or a lot of smoke later in an uncontrolled fashion.
Right. Well, as we wrap up, do you have any tips on good articles or websites about wildfires that our listeners could go to?
Well, there's the Canadian Forest Service has an excellent website on fire. And if you just say Canadian Forest Service Wildland Fire, it should get you there. I don't have the website right beside me, but if you Google or Bing that, I'm sure it will get there. Or Canadian Wildland Fire Information System should get you there as well.
Thank you so much. We'll have to wrap up there. Our guest on Radio EcoShock has been Canadian wildfire expert Dr. Mike Flanagan. He was editor-in-chief of the International Journal of Wildland Fire from 2002 to 2008. He's been a leader with the U.S. National Assessment on Global Change and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He's got over 200 published papers in his career so far. So, Dr. Flanagan, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
My pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith. Find out more at ecoshock.org.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.